Gentlemen. Jazz, can you hand me my beverage?
Yeah.
What a bad host I was, not giving your beverage, but I guess you're the host.
Gentlemen, welcome to The Grit for, I don't know, what's today? November 8th, 2019. Special episode.
Sorry, I'm checking ticket sales.
Whoa, that is a deep, sexy voice.
Thank you.
We're live from the Florida Surf Film Festival, gentlemen. New Smyrna Beach, Florida.
Still salty. Are you guys still salty?
Oh, feels so good.
My nips are a little bit raw right now. How's everybody's nips?
I'm fine.
No, I was making a joke about you, what you did to his nips.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Dumb.
I got the joke.
Can we start over?
I got the joke. So how's everybody's nipples today? Let's open the show on nipple talk. How'd it go? This morning's session, you guys?
I had a great time.
Yeah?
I really thought I was going to get bit by a shark, to be honest. I thought it would so serve me right to get bit by a shark. But then I thought, here's what I thought. Imagine if I was a shark bite victim, how much outrage I could manufacture. It would be
32 articles.
I mean, at least.
Yeah.
There'd be a march on Washington, D.C., I feel.
I think so, for sure.
I would do the 5,000 surfer march. You think I could rally 5,000 surfers to go to D.C. to demand that all sharks got killed?
Yes, I do. I think the crazier the political statement, then the more
I'd have a lot vitriol, of, yeah. I would have a lot of outrage.
Who's who's the Beach Grit guy? Is it Fred Paul? That's the crazed shark killer.
Fred Paul wants
to kill them all.
Is an anti-shark man. Yeah,
right.
He's an anti-shark.
He views sharks the way the rest of us view mosquitoes.
Yeah,
there's no environmental component to saving the shark. You just get rid of shark.
The Derek Riley always has the good point, is why do we kill and eat tuna, cute little tuna, indiscriminately all day, every day, but when it comes to killing a shark, everybody feels real sad about it.
Or on the tuna package, it says dolphin safe.
Sure.
So we're worried about the dolphins, but not the tuna?
Yeah, precisely.
Because dolphins are cuter.
Sure, but sharks are not cute, right. And we're also worried about the sharks.
Did you read if you're eating swordfish, it's probably shark article the other day?
No.
I did read, though, a U.S. governmental commission, their whole thing was, hey, you want to have a good snack? Eat more shark. The shark is now sustainable and great. Except isn't it high in some kind of weird acid that gives you gout? I think I read that on the Beach Creek comments.
How come no one gets gout anymore?
I think
we all eat citrus.
Well, I think we do in Florida.
Gout.
Gout's a Florida thing.
I got some buddies in Georgia that have some gout.
It wasn't gout. Gout's supposedly the most most painful thing you can endure this side of like kidney stones, right?
Really?
I've read enough books that were set like in the, you know, on sailing ships in the 19th century, and the captain has gout and he can't get out of bed.
What? How do you get gout again? Is it? It's from some kind of acid
It's crystals or something in your bones, nerves,
but it's from some kind of acid that's in food.
There's a Google search waiting for it.
Citrus didn't cure gout. Citrus cured scurvy.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Well, what are we doing in Florida? Chaz, explain to listeners, and who's this new voice that we have on?
So we are here for the fantastic, the best in show Florida Surf Film Festival. It's truly and honestly the best Florida Surf Film Festival I've ever been to.
You qualify it by saying it's the best Florida Surf
Film? Just the same way I qualify you by saying you're the world's greatest
60-year-old surf writer
and only surf historian.
Okay. Living in Seattle in the year 2019.
No, it is truly and honestly the best surf film festival.
How many surf film festivals have you been to?
I've been to probably, I'm going to say five.
I feel that's a heavy compliment coming from you. Thank you.
It's true. It's the best one I've ever seen, too. I'll say that. I'll go so far as to say I've never seen on Instagram or elsewhere a better one.
I think it is actually run like a business, which helps tremendously. And that isn't to slight just other surf film festivals. It's actually to slight all of the surf industry. Like a lot of business, surfboard manufacturers, clothing brands, a lot of just don't run their businesses the way that you would if you worked in tech or pharma or anything else.
Or accounting.
And that's probably why. So Kevin's an accountant by day, but so it's run like a business, but then more importantly is it's the most successful version of bringing together community that I've seen in a surf film festival. And your guys' curation process for the films is always top notch. So anyways, Matt, Chaz, and I are here as jurors for the film festival. There's a bunch of other filmmakers here. Jack Coleman, the guys that made Spoons, which is a great documentary. If
Wyatt,
listeners haven't seen
Wyatt Daly and Justin. Yeah, Justin Mish.
Why did Jack Coleman surf his asymmetrical finless today?
He mainly surfs finless nowadays.
That's just his thing.
He's a disciple of Derek Hind.
Mm. Get it. Get it all.
Yeah.
We surfed New Smyrna Beach this morning. Very fun. I just kept trying to stick Gorkin flips all day long in honor of Aaron Cormican. Have you ever landed a Gorkin flip?
What?
Have you ever attempted a Gorkin flip?
No.
I attempted one today. I almost hit, knocked my teeth out with my board.
You
know
you have to get to your feet before you can complete.
Yeah, no. I really had a banger. I had the section and I went up and almost took my teeth out.
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, it's a dangerous move, the Gorkin.
So Jack, I think he's at the point where it's impossible to have fun on 3-foot waves on a board, like a traditional board that has fins.
He's a really good surfer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's a great surfer. So what the hell though? So he is honestly the man who's watched way too much porn and now can only get off by humping midgets.
And asphyxiation.
Yeah.
That's what he is. Asphyxiating the midget and himself.
So Jack Coleman, we're going to find Jack Coleman hanging from a finless surboard someday in the closet.
The NXS guy?
Exactly.
Dude, if we do, let's make a pact right now that we, when we find that body, we treat it with dignity, we put him in bed, put a Bible on his chest, and
put a fin in his board. That's what I'm going to do first.
Exactly. Because there's no parent wants to find their kid out that way.
Jack Coleman literally took a perfectly fine asymmetrical board. You know I like asymmetricals, David Lee. You know that I feel a profound sense of, I don't know, I guess I become really personally attached to the asymmetrical.
And well, you think he defiled it?
He just popped the fins right out and went and surfed it.
So he got the best wave I saw today, for the record. I was paddling out, set left, like an actual wave that any of us would have been psyched on. And he paddles into it. And then once he catches the wave, pushes his board in front of him and used it as a hand plane. And it was like, how long is that board? It was like a 6.5-foot board, maybe 7 feet. So he's using it as a hand plane, just holding on to like the back tail. And it starts spinning, but it goes sideways, like it side slips, but he had it under control. So the board was kind of like flirting with the lip, but he's holding onto the bottom and he was fully in control the whole time. And then he slid it underneath him and like body surfed a little barrel with it. And
show off.
It was awesome. It was like, and I was paddling out and I hooted him. So that, I think his goal was like, look, if I get to my feet, I can't have fun out here standing up because I've surfed a million waves standing up and better waves standing up. So how do I make it fun?
He has a sickness.
Yeah, that's what it is.
He has a sickness, a sick man, Jack Coleman.
So I wanted to say something regarding the film festival, because when I was first here with both of you guys, Charlie and Kevin, it reminded me that I met both of you guys at a film festival at the New York Film Festival. I don't mind plugging them because it doesn't exist anymore, right? But I met both of you guys on the same night. It was like 8 or 9 years ago.
No kidding, same night?
Yeah.
It was 2012, so.
2012, yeah, 7 years ago. That's where I met Charlie.
Yeah.
And then later that night, I met you, Kevin, and we were just a couple of kids, you and I, crazy idea about starting our own things.
Yeah, and I just, I was telling you, I knew you had written some great pieces, but I think the two surfer articles that I remember the most, I said, oh yeah, it was about this guy not turning on the heat in the car because he didn't want to get too warm and cozy before he paddled out, and you're like, yeah, I wrote that. And then I did the same thing with another article, so it was...
But you said, I'm here because I'm going to start my own film festival in Florida. And I don't know why we ended up, we were just holding up that table outside of that cafe in Brooklyn somewhere. And we ended up spending most of the evening just sitting there with a few other people talking about, I don't know, we just sort of hit it off. And then the film festival started, this one, and you kept inviting me out year after year. And I couldn't because I was too busy getting EOS together. And then about 3 years ago, I said yes, and I've been coming ever since.
Has there been an explosion of surf film festivals around the world, or is it just my imagination? I feel there's been a real...
How old's the London one?
I heard that one's old.
10 years maybe more, Chris is doing. Yeah, it's well done too. It's probably the finest out there across the pond, you know? And I think, everybody... would love to be in London, of course, but I think we take the more of a Sundance backwoods,
right?
You know, art center approach where we just want to get everybody together and watch some movies and like we did at the New York one, just sit and chat too.
Right? Yeah. Elaborate on that. Give listeners an idea. Why did you start the film fest? What was your background growing up?
Yeah. I started surfing in high school, early high school, and went to a couple of Cinema Draft House movies where Matt Keckley's in the back, and these guys were huge in our world, right? So we're just done, you know, looking up to them, get the movies in front of us. I don't know, that somebody just knocked on the door, which is why we're taking
invite him in. I don't know who it is, but bring him in.
Scott Hewlett.
Scott Hewlett, are you joining the party?
I guess so.
Matt, you're going to share a mic. Yeah. Can you find a chair? Find a chair and then come back.
Probably. Yeah, long story short.
Do you want a drink? Hewlett? Sure. Right. Chaz will make him a drink. Close that door.
But yeah, the hope was to continue the stoke for the young people that I felt when I was sitting in the theater. And I also like surf movies. Yeah, I'm easy to please on the entertainment scale.
Yeah.
I can get critical, but I'm also the guy whose favorite night of the week was the night before I'm going surfing and I need a beer and a pizza and a surf movie.
Yeah.
And I'm good. And the community, bringing them out, that never killed anybody. Right. So, yeah, that's where we're at.
Well, you guys are killing it. And to give people a background, you partner with John Brooks, who both of you guys have day jobs. So you're a CPA by day. John is a firefighter here in New Smyrna Beach. So normal working class dudes pulling off a really awesome little community event. It's epic. Well done.
Thank you.
But the more important reason why you wanted to be on today's show is to retaliate against Chaz, right?
Yeah.
Tell me, what's your problem?
Well, Kevin, does he have to get in line with
here, you? Yes, he does actually. Yeah, but he's first. He does.
There's a thing where I have to drive an hour to work 3 days a week. Yeah. So, you know, and then an hour home. So I get to listen to everything you guys put out there. And my dad has always been, you know, don't just complain about something, come up with a solution. Otherwise, you're a worthless piece of shit. And you need to be somebody who fixes things and executes. Otherwise, you're a pain in my ass. Get the fuck away.
Yep.
Pardon my language, but. There is a lot of complaining going on this podcast lately, and I'm here to say that we need some goddamn solutions. And if I'm going to lay down some Steve Miller rules, this is it right here. So Chaz has, we talked about it last night too. Chaz is definitely throwing down the complaints. I want to know how you, Chaz, are going to fix the WSL.
Kevin, let me first start off by explaining something. I have a gift. I was born with a particular gift. And my gift is only destructive. I try to build things and it doesn't work.
Like Polly.
Exactly.
You've done a pretty good job with Beach Grit, damn it.
You thought I built Beach Grit? Well, I have okay. Derek Riley, is the genius behind the building. I just go and throw rocks as hard and far as I can. That's the honest to goodness only thing I could do. So my whole goal with this is, first, before you can build something, of course, you have to destroy it, right? I mean, there's an ugly structure built over professional surfing right now. It's a hideous structure. It's like one of those, what is it? It's like I'm going to call it a fake hacienda style tract home in Southern California on a beautiful piece of property, right?
Structure's vague. I want to know what pieces of the structure that you're talking about. If we have to deconstruct this, like you say structure. What is the structure and what is it about it that bothers you?
Okay, so the structure of the WSL, as far as I see it at this point, is if they were still ASP days, right? Association of Surfing Professional Days, they were all only about surf contests. The brands basically own the surf contest. The ASP was I remember the first time I met Brody Carr, the old CEO of the ASP. And I thought, I can't, this is epic. I'm meeting the CEO. He's probably the first CEO I ever met. And come to find out after maybe two drinks, I realized the ASP had like a $8.50 budget and Brody was probably working on free t-shirts from Billabong that he would sell out of the back of his car. Like there was just no money in the ASP. It was just the brands that did it. And so the tour structure was what it was, right? The tour structure, I think, will always be what it is. Matt?
Well, the events back then were independently owned. The ASP's whole function really was just to provide, I think, the same judges event to event and to do the scoring. But there was almost no central. There was no
zero structure. It was the Quicksilver 10. I mean, it was the brands.
And so remember back then, every one of the streams was different, like the different brand and everything. And it all, and the website you would go on to access it was different.
Sure.
I mean, every event you had to kind of introduce yourself to how to operate the stream.
And so I suppose I appreciate the WSL for centralizing it, though I really don't. I liked the different flavors because I liked the different, back in the day, ASP days, you'd get different broadcasters too, right? Like Volcom would have different announcers.
No,
Billabong would have different announcers. Quicksilver would have different announcers.
None of those guys were those guys were all terrible too.
Sure, but at least you got different terrible.
I know that you're going to do what you do, but I think the WSL does deserve credit for actually
centralizing the tour,
not centralizing it, but for giving it a certain format. So when I tune into any one of the 10 events, I kind of know where I am.
Sure.
I think that's important. And you know, the stream,
turn the mic, Tootie.
The stream itself is pretty good. The ASP would have sort of kept up technologically and probably maybe been right where we are. But the WSL happened to be the organization that, if you went back and looked at what we were watching 5 years ago, it would be a joke.
But that's what everybody was watching. I mean, that was the state of the art of streaming.
That's still a false equivalency, though, because you have the economies of scale of doing 100% of the contest during the year with the same equipment and the same staff.
Right.
And that's going to be more effective than leaving it up to the brands to come up with their own production. The quality of production, I think, is undeniably going to be better with some
stuff. I'm not even saying we should go back to those days. I'm just saying WSL, what I like about it, I suppose, is the centralized thing.
Right.
Even though it wasn't bad back in the day, it was just different. But what I hate about it is the WSL now realize that they cannot make money off surfing contests. What they need to do is make money off surfing. They need to own surfing, right? And so this is the goal. This is very clearly stated, the mission of, we will own surfing. We will own the entire thing. I say, fuck that. You never had it in the first place. I will not let you own it. And so all I have to do is destroy, right? Everybody else will create. And I create my own weird little, universe at Beach Grit. And I guess not so little anymore, but that's what I'm doing. But my thing, my main thing is there doesn't need to be real solutions. You just don't get to own surfing. And if for one second you think you can own surfing, this thing.
Is that really, what is their mission statement?
That's it. They realize, I think, very clearly that they cannot make money off professional surfing, but I think they think if we can sell all these HBO shows, all these Netflix stuff, if we can basically bring it all in, surfing's always been a sinking ship, right? And if we can basically cut people out, buy what works, put it under one roof, then we have a saleable commodity, which surfing is not a fucking saleable commodity.
But who knows? So who knows if that, who's to say, does anybody really know that that isn't working? There's zero numbers, there's zero data to say how it's working or not working.
If it was working, we'd hear about it. Like I think it's a failure. I think the biggest point of fact of how it's a failure is the fact that they put Kelly's Surf Ranch back on tour this year.
Yeah.
So
that was the only weird, there was a lot of weirdness in that thing, but that's
money driven. A lot of this is money driven.
But it was a
network, but it doesn't financing. Feel like it,
but that's not, they didn't, I don't think that made any money for them.
Fox has given them some money for this.
It's not money driven on the broadcast of it. It's money driven on how are they going to sell something for $50,000 a day that they're not willing to throw a tour event at. This is a loss leader for their business model going forward, which is the wave pool, so I even heard a rumor today. Here's a hot rumor. I haven't even put it on Beach Grit. You ready for this, David Lee Scales?
Ready.
You ready, Matt Warshaw?
I am, yeah.
Rumor. I'll hedge this with rumor. But Eric Logan, ELO, president of Content Media Studios and Storytelling himself, did not want Surf Ranch back on tour.
So now,
we just, great.
Wow.
The surfers hate it. ELO, I think, wants to be bros with the surfers, kind of, at some level. Realize there's no story to tell. This thing is a utter failure in terms of storytelling, in terms of what comes out of there. Nobody likes it. And again, rumor, but the brass above ELO said, nope, this is
the business needs it.
Rammed it down his throat, right. Rammed it down everybody's throat.
Kevin, as a filmmaker, or not a filmmaker, but like a film festival host, whatever. I don't know what I'm saying. How do you feel about ELO's content? He's put out a ton of video content.
I'm not here to necessarily defend the content, and I want you to know that I feel like Chaz's step from journalist to activism is a little hard for me because I love his skills as a journalist. And I feel like the if you're going to become an activist, you need to have a more clear agenda. And attacking the content is understandable from like an Anthony Lane New Yorker movie critic sort of standpoint. Like, I don't like this. I like that. I would like to hear more of that. And as far as defending Elo goes, the guy, like you said, he just wants to be effective at his job. He wants to hire the right people. He's done his best to put the people in the positions to tell the stories. And all I'm getting from, like, I want it to succeed. You know, I love the contest at its core. And the shoulder content, as we talked about, has been
awful.
You know, uninspiring. I don't know.
It's awful.
I've seen the transformed Cuba thing.
But Chaz hasn't even watched it. Let's get that. Okay, well,
that's one thing. I don't know.
1 minute of it. Like, that terrible.
That's my thing too. There's only so much time in the day. We talked about there's so much good content out there. Why am I going to? I'm going to Instagram. Maybe I can barely get through 30 seconds of a surf break with Chris Cote or whatever. Joe, you know, so. That's I don't think that's necessarily WSL's problem. It's an attention span problem.
No. That is the World Surf League's problem.
You're watching 10 hours of screen time a day, probably.
I'll watch David Spade's
exactly
like little thing for 1 minute. You're right, but
and you'll watch something on Netflix tonight, and you keep up on every HBO series, and watching a ton.
And you love surf. Like, it should be an absolute no brainer that the World Surf League.
Yeah, again, I think my point is it's not to defend the shoulder content as much as it is to say the leap from journalism to activist should entail higher responsibility.
But all you're doing is now tearing down Chaz. What's your recommendation for how Chaz should build?
Yeah, he wants me to be more serious.
Before we go there, I want to see what Charlie thinks about being called an activist or a journalist. Because I don't think you're either of those things. I think that you're an entertainer.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But I mean, I think I love it. I read it.
He's dressed like a clown.
I don't mean, in other words, we all know what journalism is, and that was never what you set out to do. And also the activism you're doing is, what did I just say? I'm an entertainer. It's more of, it's like kind of theater almost, like online theater. And it's great. It does feel sort of semi-political to me in a way. But it doesn't feel like activism. It's always with a grin. It's always for fun. And there is something, I mean, when I talked about the book in the foreword that I did for your book, where I was saying this is a really funny book, but there's something underneath there that's really important, which is that surfing represents something that is being undermined by much of what's happening with WSL and other sort of, so there's a seriousness to that. But what do you think of yourself How do you identify? That's the right one. Thanks.
I'm gonna have to identify as activist now, I suppose.
I think
in order to, as part of your theater. Yeah, I mean, yeah, but like, yeah, I'm gonna have to rally. Nobody's gonna get rallied if I. So funny, like, I think I've done I guess Kevin, again, to your point, I've done a lot of sitting on the sidelines, and so this move into activism, I'm now putting my physical money. I don't have any actual money, so I'm putting my theoretical money where my mouth is. And like, in a more theatrical way, yes, but in a way that I actually still believe in and want people to rally behind, right? Of like, this is not representative, and WSL is not big enough, even halfway, but sure, they have a billionaire behind them,
right,
but they're not big enough to actually make this move, right? And we could all sit on our hands and do nothing. And or snipe and get ignored, right? But at some point, honest to goodness, we could get more people, I bet, picketing outside of a Surf Ranch event than actually inside watching the Surf Ranch event.
Who cares about that picketing bullshit? I mean, you talk
that's
about,
funny.
It's not that funny. It's honestly like you just said the only thing I've gotten out of this so far is you like the decentralized structure of the WSL better than the centralized.
I don't like their storytelling. I think it's awful and shit. And I think what they should do is, instead of trying to do it in-house, actually figure the fuck out and go around to the people who have been in surfing forever and or are
Pat
fresh
O'Connell,
new voices.
Chris Cote. I mean, they don't qualify.
No.
They're being muzzled. Chris Cote.
That's a valid point. I agree with that. Yeah.
But Charlie, one of the things you and I were talking about last night is are you still trying to convince WSL to change course, or do you think that you have to get rid of the WSL and put in something new with people who sort of get it.
What I think,
those are two really different things.
I think they completely do not understand. The WSL has no concept of how big and or passionate the real community is. And so there just straight up needs to be a show of force. And so,
to what Kevin was just saying, so then Charlie's job, if Charlie believes that, and maybe all of us in this room do, mm-hmm. then Charlie's job isn't done. You would say, okay, well, look, we need to think of what's next.
Next.
After this. Yeah, next. Like, it seems to me still that you're not going to get very far trying to convince WSL to make better hires and put out better content. They're just not going to do it. They are what they are.
So if we had a protest, say, at this next surf ranch, if we really built up to this, there was more people out, more surfers who drove to Lemoore to picket than to go watch the event.
Right.
New York Times and everything would cover that. That would be the fact that a group of people revolted from the thing that was supposed to be representing them would be a very, very, very funny, I think, national story. And then the World Surf League would have to. What they do right now is just plug their ears, right? They have...
Right.
Again, Dirk Ziff, they want to think this is small. They want to think that, which is why they've moved their entire model from, okay, we're not going to try to appeal to surfers because who cares about surfers? We're going to try to get some other group to buy into this thing, right? I mean,
there's an exit on the horizon that they're thinking of.
Precisely.
Every business owner is always thinking.
1,000%. But that exit is not about, like, it's surfers to them are just too small. But what if we show them? We may be small, but we're bigger than you.
To what end is the point? What are you trying to do?
Who knows?
You want to get Elo fired and then have them?
No.
Dirk hire somebody else?
No. I want to get... Elo's my stepping stone to Dirk. I want to take a fucking billionaire down.
Okay. All right. So that is the end game.
For me.
Get rid of the owner of the current centralized WSL. So that what happens?
David Lee, that's your Matt Warshaw. Who knows? Well, I mean, other people. That's other people in the real community.
But just
Scott Hewlett,
that's sort of play
Pesman.
Let's just say that Dirk said, "I've had enough of this. This has been a thorn in my side for 4 or 5 years. I'm losing money. I'm stepping out." Who do we think would be a good person to replace him to rebuild?
Brody Carr.
Okay.
Brody knows the thing. He's done it before. Like, you get somebody like that. Brody Carr was a surfer, right? And they need a surfer back in there. And I know surfers, I've complained about before. You don't put a fucking surfer as a CEO of a company. They don't know what the fuck they're doing.
Right.
But there's some that do, right? Like, there is some surfers who have enough business sense. Or Kevin, for example. Kevin, Kevin should be stinking CEO of the WSL.
Right.
Kevin is a surfer who also understands business. It's not like a weirdly impossible thing. And those things can balance. It's just not Dirk Ziff. It's not Elo, who has a giant altar to Laird Hamilton in his office. Right. It's not, these people just don't get it. They flat out do not get it.
Yeah. I think there's been moments where, like, Rabbit or maybe Ian Cairns even get involved in the organization.
Get Ian back in there.
And they have, maybe not Ian's not the best example, but we need a visionary. I feel like there's no visionary at the top who has, like, a real strong direction and understanding for where to take things. So you have a corporation with a bunch of different people making decisions in a boardroom who's making decisions. And that's just not a great way to run this business. It's a great way to run a lot of businesses, but with this, I think there needs to be a little bit more direction that is true to the nature of act itself.
Right. Like a makeup company or something. There's no passion behind makeup, right? It just is a product. It is what it is. And so you can have a room of people trying to figure out the best way to sell it.
Yeah.
Surfing is just different. It's more than makeup. And so you need somebody who not only understands business, but understands surfing. And I, again, will say fundamentally, God bless Eric Logan. I mean, truly, at a personal level, I'm sure he's a great family man and all of this stuff, but he's a fucking kook from Oklahoma who doesn't know the first thing about it and blew in from Oklahoma and then declared himself. Again, the real thing that kicked me over the edge, I mean, I get kicked over the edge fairly regularly, but the latest edge was that him calling himself a storyteller. And then he's going, you know, that's his thing. He tells stories. He's not, I mean, what story has he ever told? He was not a storyteller at Oprah. Like, he was president of the Oprah Network. He wasn't down in the trenches making stories. He was just, you know, doing
the entire success of Oprah's network is storytelling.
But it's not, it's Oprah's storytelling. It's not his.
Well, it's like, but I look at it this way. Momentum Generation could have been directed by a surfer, but they hired Mike and Jeff Zimbalist to come in and nail it. And they're not surfers. And so I think the entire theory on that was, let's take somebody who's really good over here with this, who unfortunately posts way too many Instagram photos of himself stand-up paddleboarding. But if he, I mean, if, let's just imagine, if he took that one piece of his public persona away and was just somebody who wanted to come in, quietly direct the storytelling and hire the right people and wasn't so in your face about it, would that be...
No, he failed. He's already failed.
Success, the success of the Momentum Generation thing is that it wasn't about surfing.
And it wasn't a failure.
It was about interpersonal connections.
Isn't that what shoulder content is
ideally supposed to be about? I mean, that's what all of the WSL's content should be about, other than the contest.
The problem is, it's awful. Like, I gave Elo a good year run of not beating him up anymore and whatever. And the proof is in the pudding. Yeah, I mean, remember, I really went hard on his Instagram. Then we podcasted. I rolled over on my back.
Yeah.
And then I stopped.
That wasn't a year.
I mean, it was enough time for him to make the content that he was promising that he was going to make. Yeah. That is, every piece of it is garbage, except for the accidental wonderful success of the Kelly Slater sound waves.
So I think that what the reality is, we all want the WSL and all the shoulder content to succeed and be great. But they're going, well,
yeah. Hewlett, well, get Hewlett, Hewlett on the mic.
Hewlett doesn't care.
Hewlett hates the whole thing.
Point that mic down at Hewlett and let him
Scott Hewlett hates professional surfing.
But, well, I just don't care. It's not hate. I just, that's not the component of surfing that attracted me or our readers.
But
the
journal. But don't you care. Aren't you interested in having more surf stuff to watch?
No.
You don't want any more surfing.
But that's valid. He doesn't. You don't have to.
I know it's valid. I want to hear him tell it.
It's oversubscribed. It's tapped out. It's everywhere. I don't want more. I feel guilty for making more.
Really?
Epic.
In whatever amazing, whatever best case scenario all of us could think up for a future WSL, there's going to be a big percentage of people like Scott that tune out. Just the way I don't watch NFL. You know, you're not going to get everybody.
Yeah.
It's surfing for me was never in our readership. It's never been about a organization, contest, socias, hangouts, parties. It's a...
So what is it about?
It's for you. Yeah. Personal.
Yeah. Scott, by the way, is with the Surfers Journal, for listeners who are unaware.
I think Scott Hewlett represents the vast majority of what surfers. I so rarely hear somebody talking about a heat in the water, so rarely as to almost say never. I don't think surfers consume the product.
Look at this film festival. How many pieces are about pro surfing?
Zero.
Totally. Zero.
Rest but, my case.
But here's the other thing, is I'm going to say your tribe of the selfish surfing's for me. Surfing is for us. We should have something to have fun with I'm being semi-facetious here, but that's what I love about World Surf League and all this. It gives me something to laugh at with Derek Riley, with David Lee, with Matt Warshaw, with Kevin. Like, there's the pro surfing thing, as goofy as it is, brings this kind of commonality to our, because our own surfing, I think you're exactly, surfing is so... Damn it. When did it get so precious to me? Why? I mean, I think
you don't have to watch it. You can turn it off. You don't.
No, that's the fun part.
Charlie's point is that at some level we do want it. So I agree with you. Like, when I'm surfing, especially me.
Precisely. Meddling.
But, and it used to be in the old days that when we went to a surf movie, which is partly what's happening here with this, there are certain places, certain spheres where it's fun to congregate.
And
to me, it's never been in the water or in the beach, but
that's exactly
a surf movie. But also
WSL
for me, absolutely,
or pro surf contest.
So some of the pro contests, not all of them, because if contest's shitty enough, everyone just scatters. But on some of the good ones, when I open a window on the Beach Grit comments thread, and it's everybody just sitting there throwing peanut shells at the screen,
it's
and
so much stuff, fun,
and it's. It's that doesn't feel corporatized at all. That to me is taking this thing that they're putting out there and flipping it to our own use.
That's
great. That feels organic, and it feels sort of like what it felt like to be in an audience at the Santa Monica Civic for the Five Summer Stories debut. So that's, you know.
I mean, that's, again, I agree with you, Scott, entirely. My surfing is so precious to me, and I'm frustrated how precious it is to me, but it's so precious that I never really want to talk about it. What I can talk about with, and that we all have a shared understanding of, is the tour, right?
Right.
Like, we can talk about all of these other surfers. That's the value for me.
And also, I've never gotten much, since I've been a little kid, value out of talking about how great surfing is, because what a wank that is, right? I mean, and so much, you know, the wall of positive noise, but also just the, it ought to be sort of a heckling thing that isn't about how great it is and how lucky we are and how it's, we all know that. That's
sure.
That's just baked in. So I always thought the really fun part of surfing, and I picked up on this when I was really little, was all the stuff that's happening off sort of on the sides.
Which is showcased greatly through film. And surf film is something that I grew up with and loving. And then I feel like it kind of disintegrated for the last decade or so. And Kevin, you guys are responsible for helping revive it, at least in my awareness.
That's why I invited you to join the jury, because I heard you shit talking movies. And I was like, he just doesn't know. He hasn't watched movies lately. We need to get him plugged in.
And honestly,
to even, a movie setting, like on the big screen.
And even still, stuff flies way under my radar. And I feel like because of the podcast, I'm fairly dialed in. And then you guys send me a list of stuff that came out in the last year. And I go, I haven't even heard of any of this.
Isn't that crazy?
It's wild.
I'd heard of two of the movies in this year's slate. And they're all like truly exceptional. I mean, it's a well-curated film festival. They're all truly exceptional pieces. And that's crazy that I'm in the surf every day. It's all I do. And yeah.
That's what Atlantic Center for the Arts set out to do, is give a place for early to mid-career artists to work on their craft. And now here I am going, oh, well, that makes sense. Why don't I do that for early to mid-career surf movie filmmakers who are just trying to make a story for us? And those are a lot of the best movies that get shown out here, I think.
Who's your biggest break? Which like unknown artist have you shown here that went on to become surf cinema royalty with Driving Maybachs? And
yeah, we're 7 years in, and you know, it was cool to see Joseph Ryan's Fish documentary make it onto Netflix. Anything, you know, because that was kind of a first for us to see a feature that got voted best documentary and then get a wide release on a digital platform, because I think prior to that, most everything we were showing was so endemic that it was like not making it out there anymore.
Is it on Netflix
except for
now?
Maybe iTunes? Yeah, I think so. I think I don't know if it still is, but it definitely is available out there. But it highlighted what happened in the 90s with everybody trying to ride a little potato chip instead of actually concentrating on what would be better for their surfing. And so
what
Fish was kind of the root of, you know,
what would be the, like, a career highlight? Like, if a movie that premiered here won an Oscar, would you be, I mean, like, for the surf festival circuit, is that A number one?
No, I don't care about that. I just like the younger guys making, putting them in front of an audience. Like tonight or tomorrow night, we might have somebody who's just made their first feature length documentary receive an award that they consider somewhat valuable. And it's easy to please me on that front. I don't have like the whole, you know, the hope is that you guys show up and the fans show up and then we all have a good time. And that's like,
check the box. I'm saying that I have a hard time finding all of this stuff, or it just doesn't come across my radar. For all the listeners who feel the exact same way that I do, where do they find surf films nowadays?
We archive all of our selections on our website, so you can always go there and find the title.
But
all
they can find the title, but
including
where
winners.
Can they watch them?
It's a Google search away, usually. Okay. And a lot of this stuff is for free on Vimeo. But like folks like Nathan Oldfield will charge you $3 or $4 to rent Church of the Open Sky, one of the best soundtracks of any surf movie, by the way. I love that movie, too. So, you know, you get a lot of the distribution is self-made through Vimeo and other outlets, iTunes.
You want to give Ira Opera a shout out too?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the subscription is so cheap. I think it's $7 a month. And while he could definitely use a boost in content, a lot of people that do license their content are restricted. So he can't get Kai Neville yet or, you know, something like that. But over the course of time and over the last 2 years, especially, he's brought on a great library, especially, you know, like I recorded all of the old surfer magazines from high school. on VHS mm-hmm. and would watch them. Stuff. And it was phenomenal. And he did all those.
What's Ira's business?
Sorry?
What's Ira's business?
Oh, he founded and
Surf Network?
Curated the Surf Network library, and it's $7 a month.
And it's an add-on on Amazon, I think, too. You could.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, can we give a shout-out to Ira for taking on Mickey Dora and kicking his ass in court?
Oh, my Charlotte, goodness. Yeah.
Right?
I love that.
I don't know the story.
On Beach Grid.
The story is that Ira made a movie called Legends of Malibu that had... is that how it went down? Was it Legends of Malibu?
Legends of Malibu,
and it used Mickey Dora's name, talked about Dora, and had some footage of Dora, and Dora said, you guys didn't get permission from me to do this. I should be paid or something like that. And Ira said, no, you're a public figure. And it went to court, and did it go to the Supreme Court?
It went to the highest circuit court in California. Like it was a real serious.
It was a big deal case, and you know there's still things that people can do now with regard to making documentaries that they can do because Ira took on Mickey Dora and won.
Yeah, no, it was an epic case. You should go read Beach Grit.
Did you write about it recently though, or was it
like two, three weeks ago or something? David Lee, I'm also a surf journalist. I forget.
I know, sorry, I forgot.
I'm not
forgot.
Just an activist.
Your Instagram handle reminds me every time.
You moonlight as an activist. Do you moonlight as a journalist or you moonlight as an activist?
I think I'm moonlighting as an activist right now, and then I also moonlight as a journalist, so I have a couple of side gigs. I don't know what my
bartender
real, yeah I don't know what my real
bartender
gig
during our podcast. Well, to lighten the mood, since we're in Florida, we're gonna play a game today. It's called Florida Man, and I sadly, Scott, I didn't know, I thought you were taking a nap when I texted you. I never heard back from you, so I didn't get your birth date, but I got everybody else's in the room. So the way that Florida Man plays is you type words. I'll take another one too, Chaz. You type the words Florida Man into Google with your birth date, and Google automatically generates a headline, as Google does, from that date. So I put Kevin's birthday in, and the first headline that popped up randomly was Florida Man cited after authorities found an illegally poached gator foot stuck in his dashboard.
I thought you were going to say stuck in his anus, which would have been...
That would have been Germany, man. Chaz, Florida Man claiming to be Alice in Wonderland, says hookah smoking caterpillar told him to destroy liquor store with a forklift.
How?
That's
that,
good.
That could literally not be more apt. That is like the metaphor.
Charlie's making a drink. That's what
that is honestly the metaphor for my attack against the WSL right there.
There you go. Matt Warshaw, Florida man shot and killed brother over cheeseburger.
I'm sorry, Chris.
Is he into cheeseburgers?
He is.
There you go.
Chili cheeseburgers, my there brother, yeah.
And mine is Florida man arrested for shooting cat with crossbow, which would take an accurate shot.
What do you think out of 100 Florida man stories, how many involve alligators?
38%.
I was going to say 30%.
Yeah. Yeah.
50% involve guns.
Yeah. I'd say,
well, crossbows. You're underestimating crossbows.
Yeah. Lobbing strip clubs.
Yeah.
Strip clubs
for
sure.
5%.
Yeah. I think if we drew a Venn diagram with strip clubs, crossbows, gators
domestic violence.
Domestic violence for sure. There's when you're going over the bridge to then you're on Flagler and then you're going to make a left to go to the beach. The store on the right says meth something. It's like,
or it's core meth boutique, but it reads differently. Yeah.
And the leaf or the whatever bush covers up core. So it just says meth boutique. I took a photo of it the other day, which is very Florida.
We're also joined by John Brooks, who's also the other co-founder of the Florida Surf Film Festival. And I wanted
Jump.
To ask, do you guys, is it, you're putting on a happy, brave face right now, but does it bother you when we talk about Florida Man? Like, is that insulting for you guys?
No, it's just the United States was shaken very hard and all this shit went to the bottom.
So that wasn't for me. That was from Kevin Miller.
Yeah, no, we embrace it.
Yeah. You do.
Florida's the taint of America.
John, from the drawing that I have that I like to send around to anybody who ever talks about Florida, it's actually the shaft. I'll show you that.
I know. I know. I've seen it. I know the drawing.
Yeah. The drawing is so good. John, I don't know if this is a violation of company policy, but if you can retell the story from the last night that you worked.
Oh, yeah.
Listeners would love it. And I don't think Chaz has heard
it. Is it going to involve gore? Because too many of John's stories involve gore.
No, this is a happy one.
And this is a full Florida man story.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So, I work in emergency services, super vague. And we got called out to a nursing home facility in the middle of the night, which we often do. And when we got there, there was a gentleman there, 400 pounds, every single pound of 400 pounds, laying on the floor beside the bed. So we have to call an additional unit to get him up off the floor.
And you're ripped.
So we get, I'm super strong for being 5'3". And so we get this guy up off the floor, and we're going to temporarily position him on the side of the bed before we transfer him to the stretcher. And when we set him on the side of the bed, he sits unwittingly to all of us on his remote control. And at the end of his bed, on the wall, on his 60-inch flat screen, his porn comes up in right in the middle.
Good stroke.
Like, maybe even, like, at the end. I mean, we're dangerously close to
the money shot.
Yeah, the money shot, for sure. And so, and it's at full volume. And everybody starts looking for the remote. Nobody can find the remote. The guy himself is like, what is happening?
Who turned that on?
Is this my room? You know? And then somebody finds a remote on the nightstand and, you know, pushing every button. And they're like, this isn't the right remote. You know? Everybody's panicking. One of the crew members from the other agency turns and looks at me as I slide into the recliner and gently cross my legs. And he just looks at me. He doesn't say anything, but he looks at me with this look of like, how are you not panicking? And I just gave him a wink and said, already seen this one.
The dude fell out of the chair because he was beating it too hard.
Out of his bed.
Out of his bed. Because he was beating it.
You know what would have been awesome if you looked on the screen and noticed that it was one of your ETM buddies on screen? Like that
was. So what was he watching? What was his brand?
Oh, it was good. It was Janis Griffith.
Oh, yeah.
It's good stuff.
Okay. So just normal vanilla male on female action.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, not an overweight guy.
Very interesting. So he likes to. Here's my big question with Pornhub or other porn sites. It operates like YouTube, where there's a thumbs up and a thumbs down button. These are human beings watching pornography for free, watching a runaway take it in. Pushing the thumbs down button? What the heck? Like, how ungrateful are you to where you're gonna thumbs down it? When your previous generations had to set up a real projector, like wait till your parents are gone for 8 hours because you got to get the reel-to-reel out and like set up a sheet to broadcast it on. And now it's a touch of a button away and you can watch anything that you want, and yet they all have thumbs downs. What the heck? That is an ultimate indignity. And for the young runaway who's then watching her video later going, what the heck? Like, people didn't like that I could do this?
Only 46% like this?
Yeah, what the heck, man?
How is there not a Florida Porn Film Festival right now?
Oh, my goodness.
You want to diversify?
Come on, Kevin.
You're the businessman, Kevin.
Totally good. Thank you. I'm totally fine.
Come on, Kevin. By the way, this is a perfect time to segue to our sponsor, manscaped.com.
Oh, yeah.
If you use our promo code SURFING, not only do you get the precision engineered tools for your family jewels, but you also support this show, which is the most important thing. So 20% off plus free shipping. Chaz, did you prepare
a
segment of Love Hurts?
I got one for you.
All right. Love Hurts, presented by Manscaped.
David Lee.
So chat for everybody in the room who doesn't listen to our podcast, which is everybody in the room. Dating advice provided by Chaz and David.
David Lee.
Yes, sir.
Walk into a room.
Yep.
Beautiful woman.
Okay.
Gorgeous. David Lee straight for the listeners, FYI.
Straight and single.
Yeah, straight and single. So this is not trying to be a exclusive anti-homosexual anything. This is just, I can't put like weird stuff. I just wrecked it. I called homosexuality weird.
Right, I'll now. Cut it. I totally will. Not cut it.
David Lee is just a straight white male.
Let's just call him an attractive human being.
Yeah,
I like Matt's description.
He's another attractive human being.
Go on, Matt.
Okay. We could go here.
You, at a surf film festival.
One, in this one. Yeah. Okay. We're at the Florida Surf Film Festival. You see a beautiful person standing up against the wall. Beautiful face. Beautiful hair. Beautiful figure, mm-hmm, beautiful, mm-hmm, stylish clothing. You get up close, you hear some conversation, witty, funny, like sharp as a tack. Great legs. You go down, hideous feet. Are you swipe right, swipe left? It's plow right or plow left. Like, and I'm by hideous feet, I'm meaning not just like manicured and stuff, but like one toe is like big toe is crazy long, or middle toe is crazy long, or just, you know those feet, like a real.
Are you talking about a birth defect or just nappy?
No,
toes?
I'm talking about naturally horrible feet. Like
what?
No
footwear
arches.
Is she wearing?
Okay. She's wearing. Unfortunately, in this scenario, she has to be wearing an open toe sandal. But let's say she's wearing an open toe heel, even. She's not in Birkenstocks.
I've thought long and hard about this. It all comes down to hygiene for me. So if she's hygienic, but she has freaky feet, I'm in.
Really?
A plow right.
You're plowing right on freaky feet.
Plow right. I'm in room 12. Here's my key.
Really?
Yeah.
But okay, here's the thing. Have you?
I'll give you a foot massage when you get back.
Have you dated or been in a long-term relationship with a woman with ugly feet?
I have not, no.
All your partners.
But here's the thing. Yeah, all of them have had normal feet, but here's the thing. I've never even thought about it until you just brought it up right now. That's not a fetish of mine.
I'm not fetishizing it.
But people do. Obviously. People add extra weight to that category.
I heavily weight feet.
Really?
Heavily.
I knew this had to do with you somehow. Yeah.
Not on a fetish.
This felt
level.
Like a mirror.
You can see that spinning coming back around like a boomerang.
It really was.
Not on.
But what if one foot is 13 centimeters? One toe is 13 centimeters.
Not on a fetish level. Just.
But
on
she only trims once a week.
I'm just purely saying.
Hey, Jody.
Hi, Jody. Matt Warshaw's wife just gave a quick call in. Oh man, we could almost have. Would Jody
curious what
show?
Her policy on feet is?
Yeah, well let's get it from Jody right here. Put her on speaker.
Should I?
Yeah,
sure.
Okay, hold on.
You got to Jody. Ask, you got to propose the question to her, Matt.
No, I'm going to propose
she's in
it.
The car. It's not going to work.
Okay. Oh, damn it! Right, I would have been. Cute. Yeah.
Does she have a foot fetish? Will she rub your feet?
Can I flip this a little? Flip this script real quick. This is going to be a TMI thing, but when Jody and I got married 15 years ago, when I was surfing daily in San Francisco in booties that were absolute health hazards, just in terms of how funky they were. And I got married with feet that were indescribably ugly because of nail fungus.
But nail fungus is gross.
What I'm saying is that Jody, I already know what Jody would say, which was she would say it's okay.
But is Jody back?
No.
You could take
damn it. But what I'm saying is nail fungus and that kind of stuff. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about bone ugliness.
You're like, talking about hammer toe.
Have you
I'm talking
nail
about
fungus. Yeah. What it looks like.
I'm sure that's ugly, but I'm talking
that's
about
that's a different segment.
Okay.
And this nail fungus is not genetic. I'm talking about genetic, like bummers in the feet where
like
I think
bunions or something,
but
or?
No, cause bunions,
I'm not saying I wouldn't consider it, but you laid out a perfect human being.
Yeah.
And then happens to have funky feet. I'm fine with that.
So what I'm going to tell you,
David
Lee, if you fall in love with this woman, you marry her over time, you will divorce her eventually because of her ugly feet.
No, you would, not David.
Yeah, I know. Jeez, I'm disappointed in what you think of me. All right.
I'm telling you.
All right, well, tonight, hopefully she's wearing closed-toed shoes.
I mean, hopefully.
So that nobody's offended.
Yeah. Feet are important, listeners.
Yeah. Love hurts. Plow right.
Great.
Plow right. The reason why we're plowing right is because Manscaped's finest product is the Plow 2.0, the straight razor. I was explaining to Matt last night. I gave him some
David
crap.
Lee,
I was
David Lee shaves his balls with a straight razor.
I know.
Not just the balls. So And I was explaining to Matt, I gave him a hard time, like, oh, Matt could really use some Manscaped product. Matt walks up to me, he's like, I'm offended, dude. You don't know me. You don't know my policy. What is your policy?
No, it was hard enough for me to come up and have the discussion with you.
Oh, okay.
Now in front of dozens of listeners, no.
For the paltry sum they pay us, we really shouldn't be doing this. Anyways, Manscaped. Support the show by supporting Manscaped.com. 20% off promo code surfing. And you get free shipping, too. I got a barrel or not to close us out.
So excited.
Florida edition.
But wait, though. Shouldn't we go to, even though we just did a Manscaped, shouldn't we go to commercial break real quick?
I think we should. Because everybody wants barrel or not.
Yeah.
So they're forced to stick around for commercials.
I'm so excited to hear what this is.
I know. All right. Well, cutting to commercial, we'll be back with barrel or not.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. And there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, Chaz, we're back.
I can't believe Laird Hamilton snuck into our podcast.
Dude, I couldn't believe you when you told me that.
What the hell?
So what was the ad that they ran?
It was some fucking stupid shit of Laird promising some random other thing that wasn't creamer.
Mortgages?
It wasn't creamer. It was basically mortgages. It was Laird promising to make your life better somehow. Yeah. Where it was not related to any one of the hideous products he's already foisted upon the world. It wasn't selling sups. Wasn't selling creamer. Non-dairy creamer. Imagine that. Laird Hamilton went out and thought, what this world needs... is
no, he didn't.
A better non-dairy creamer.
No, a turmeric creamer company said, hey, Laird, you're our spokesperson. Oh. But I love that our ad agency's algorithm is so sophisticated that they placed Laird on our show.
That's true.
Because other times it's like fidelity.com or, ooh, you know.
What is, that's a brokerage.
Yeah.
Kevin.
Yeah.
We're going to get fucking Fidelity on this show just because we had a stock.
Just
because
we said the word.
Just because we had an accountant on the show.
Well, anyways, we're going to close out with a Florida edition of Barrel or Nah. The way that Barrel or Nah works, Matt Warshaw,
yeah,
who's never listened to an episode, is barrel means you're into it.
Mm-hmm.
This thing's awesome. Mm-hmm. Nah means definitely not into
it. Are we going to go? So again, I hate to lengthen the show any longer than it is, but in the room we have Matt Warshaw, the world's greatest and only surfing historian. We have Scott Hewlett, the best editor that the Surfers Journal has ever had. We have John Brooks, co-founder of the Florida Surf Film Festival and enjoyer of porn.
Rescuer,
while on the job.
Rescuer of 400 pound men.
And we have Kevin Miller. Sorry, I had it there. It was right there. We have Kevin Miller, the co-founder of the Florida Surf Film Festival and
worshipper of ELO.
Worshipper of the World Surf League's cutthroat business model. Okay, so we're going to go all the way around. So there's going to be a lot of barrels or nahs here.
You can give it a barrel or not and provide a description of why you feel the way you do, if you care to. Florida edition. Matt Warshaw, barrel or nah? Face tattoos.
Not. Sorry, Charlie.
You gotta.
Is that considered face? That's next.
No, that's a necker. Yeah, don't you worry. But I'm going face. So well, that you can apologize to me now.
We'll come around to you at the end. Scott Hewlett, give him a microphone.
Barrel all the way.
You're going barrel for face tattoos.
Yeah.
Explain yourself.
Just for entertainment. Not for me, for you.
Okay. If you encountered a face tattoo, male or female, are you going to engage with that human being?
Absolutely.
Okay. What are you going to ask?
Must know the story.
Okay.
Must.
Okay. There's no intimidation? You're not concerned about them being offended and then shanking you?
No, they're asking for interaction.
Okay. John Brooks, barrel or not, face tattoos?
Barrel, all the way.
Why?
Commitment. Anybody that takes that kind of commitment for whatever it is they put on their face, I got to know the story.
I feel like you treat your body like a temple. Do you have any tattoos?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one. There you
Tons.
Go. Okay. Yeah. What do they represent for you?
These ones under my arms are it's like a combination of tattoos my grandfather's had. They were both in the Navy. So it's a bunch of Navy tats that I just put together into one.
Sentimental.
Awesome. Yeah.
Scott Hewlett pointed down at his junk when we were talking about tattoos. Scott, what do you got? What are you rocking down there? This can be presented by Manscaped as well.
Hard pass.
Okay. Really? Hard pass? Midday with a bunch of dudes in the room? That's cool. Whatever you're into, man, it's cool. No judgment. Kevin?
Barrel, I'm not going to judge. That's fine. Go for it.
Whoa. I feel like Kevin came on here and he just gained so many fans for the Florida Surf.
I'm not an ELO worshiper, for the record. I want to go down. I want to fuck. I've been walking back this. I've been thinking about this for 45 seconds, just fuming. Like, there's no way. Like, okay, fact of the matter is I want the WSL to succeed. I don't care who's in charge. The fact that they hired Oprah's henchman or... is I don't know, even
you don't it have seems to like backpedal that hard.
No,
I've seen you putting hearts on his Instagram in the comments every time you post.
Yeah, exactly. No, I would honestly like a more respectable, less whored out version of the WSL. Not an ELO fan necessarily, but I do respect anybody who's hired to do a job and tries to execute it. And if he is failing with good, you know, constructive criticism of why he's failing, I would love to.
What if he got a face tattoo?
If Elo got a face tattoo, I would think he's just trying too hard, right? I mean, come on.
Which is already evident.
It would be a rub.
Yeah, exactly. That would be in line, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, I'm in line. I've gone the neck, right? And to JB's point, John's point, ultimate commitment on the face. At first, when I got my neckers tattoos, I thought this taps me out of the earning market. So now I have to live on my wits / beach grit. And
how's that working out for you? Yeah.
But then I think, no, you know, a neck tattoo is not the end. A face tattoo. So I will end with a face tattoo. And what I've been thinking lately, you know, the teardrop jail tattoos where you've killed somebody?
Yep.
No. Teardrop is from how many years you've been in prison.
I thought it was how many people you killed.
Scott?
I have to agree with Chaz on that.
It is.
Oh, yeah. Each tier is 1 year in prison.
Then people would have like 30 teardrops.
The girl does that for how many years
her man yes. or woman. Right. No judgment.
So what I want to do is get one surf industry logo as a teardrop, but I don't know which brand to choose.
Last time this came up in conversation,
yeah,
a buddy of mine who has a brand called Pura Kai, which is like yoga / surfing.
Oh my God.
He emailed me. He's like, what's the price?
Oh, why didn't you see, that's the thing. I put it out there in a show that I would get a surf industry brand tattoo and I didn't hear it was crickets.
He's listening right now. So I will.
But he doesn't want his Olakai. Pura Kai.
He's already getting advertising right now.
I mean, that's sweet. I mean,
but he does want it tattooed on your
body. What if I was going to get a teardrop just to represent
it? Almost is tear shaped.
The death of the surf. I know that one is
his logo,
but his wouldn't be representative of the death of the surf industry.
Why wouldn't you put the SEMA logo?
Does SEMA have a logo? Isn't it just SEMA?
Maybe they don't have a logo.
Yeah, I don't think they have a logo.
They do. It's a big sans serif fascist.
Oh, I'm in. I am in. That's it. The SEMA logo. Yeah. But, all right. But it's also going to be listener. If the listeners have what teardrop tattoo I should put on my eye, like, I mean, the, yeah, the
serpent. Cersei needs to do some jail time. And then you and can, then I can add start doing logos for each year. this needs to be, you need to update his entry on Encyclopedia of Surfing, by the way.
I do. Been in jail?
Not I.
That's a real bummer.
No.
Scott Hewlett. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude, you cannot offer that up without telling the story.
In two countries.
Okay. Which countries and why?
United States of America for a failure to appear. And then in Mexico for a contraband. Charge.
Yeah. What year was this?
The U.S., 81, Mexico, 84, and 87.
Wow. What did you fail to appear about?
Traffic violation.
Minor.
Yeah, but they'll take you in for that.
Yeah, bummer. Do you want to know what I was doing in 81, by the way, just off topic?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my birth year.
A bunch of us were skateboarding a swimming pool in Santa Monica in 76. And we'd all gone, one friend's car had a driver's license, and the rest of us weren't old enough to drive. And it was this funky, it wasn't even a very good pool. There were eight of us. And the cops showed up, and they took us all to, I don't know, what's not jail? It's just a holding cell. What's that called? But I was put into a cell at 16. With a bunch of other 16-year-olds. And we had to wait there for... All of our parents had to come from... So for me, it was...
Jimmy?
No, it was like the locals, you know, Santa Monica, whatever they... Where do they put people? Like, what's the holding cell or something?
That's jail, dude.
Yeah, you've been in jail, Warshaw.
Yes, I have.
Warshaw. All right. Street cred through the roof.
That's called juvie.
All right.
Were you with Jay Adams?
I love it. I was in there. It's so weird how perfectly this segues with my exact next barrel or not.
All right.
Florida edition. Breaking. This is straight from a headline, by the way. Breaking into jail to hang out with friends. This guy did this.
That's a stand up chopu hand dragon barrel right
100%.
There. 100%. You don't get more a like core with your bros or just like ready to get her. I mean, yeah.
Well,
that's the ultimate.
Let me
think
if I would break into jail to hang out with any of you guys in here.
No, we said your friends.
Yeah.
I'm gonna just say. What is it again? No
barrel, or not?
Not
barrel. I would say to break into a women's give them the mic. Facility.
Oh,
barrel.
The guy with the fewest minutes on mic has revealed the most about himself somehow.
But that's Scott, fewest words. Yeah. That's Scott Hewlett all the way.
Yeah.
No.
So female facility, yeah, barrel.
All the way.
That you would go that hard for a little bit of action.
Well, if it's personally, female prisoner action. I mean, come on. How many movies? What's the average age of your listener? Because that used to be a movie thing, like, female prisoners. Yeah. Well, I guess no. Orange is the New Black still is.
No, you know? There's websites dedicated to it as well.
All right.
Barrel or nah?
Kevin.
And John.
Yep.
Breaking into prison.
To hang with your friends.
To hang with a friend. I'm not going to do that. I'm an accountant. I'm conservative.
You got a family to consider.
I mean, liberally, politically, but conservative when it comes to breaking the law.
Yeah.
I'm barrel all the way. I'm with Chaz, like, dude, that's your boy.
Totally. Yeah. That's the best headline that you could ever create for your legacy.
Yeah. Broke into prison.
If I was sitting in prison, I would be hoping that some of my friends would be wanting to break in and hang out with me.
Yeah,
absolutely epic.
It's not going to be me or Kevin. Though.
No.
Good find, David Lee.
Do you like that one?
Yeah, I like that one.
Thanks. Final barrel or nah, Florida edition, using a rifle to shoot down a hurricane. Yeah. Also from, this is a legitimate
done it.
Florida.
No.
I'm going to go just to keep my no barrel trifecta going. So I'm going to say no.
Matt Warshaw did not get barreled today.
No, I did
not.
No.
I've never also never shot a gun.
Whoa,
not even
really?
A BB gun.
Do you have any desire to?
No.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Very fun.
I'm guessing I'm looking around here. Everyone in this room has shot a gun but me.
Yeah, I grew up. I grew up shooting guns.
This week,
multiple guns.
Yeah, most weeks.
Give him the mic.
Scott, what, Scott, where are you shooting?
No barrel.
What were you shooting a gun at?
At a fence post last week.
That you had a beef with?
No, like, no, we're getting ready for a turkey next week.
Okay. Yeah. Where are you hunting?
Palomar Mountain, California.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you're going to go hunt the turkey?
Stinkin' Scott Hewlett. I mean, I knew that Scott Hewlett was a legend for a long time. No, but it's totally true. Scott, but came in the show, uttered, 35 words? Each one was just a bomb that blew up. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Scott and Hewlett. Subscribe to the Surface Journal, everyone.
I was going to say, Scott, how can people find you, man? Can we follow your Twitter feed so that you can, like...
You tell them.
Yeah, subscribe to the Surface Journal. Surface Journal is honest-to-goodness art.
All right, John Brooks, shooting a hurricane with a rifle.
Nah.
Not going for it.
It doesn't work. Tried it.
The hurricane still comes.
Yep.
Bummer. Your aim is off, I think. That's probably...
You didn't hit the heart. Yeah. You got to. If you're going to shoot at a hurricane, you have to hit right in the eye.
Yeah.
Shoot in the neck.
You missed.
It's got to be frustrating if you're in the middle of a hurricane. If you think Cat 5, Bahamas, and all that, I say fucking A, do it. Shoot the gun.
Okay. You sympathize with the hurricane victims.
Anything. Yep. It's got to be a rage release.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, so you think that's...
The stress release.
Anger.
Right.
Anger.
Deep. Man, Kevin. I'm learning a lot about Kevin, too.
If Maverick's barreled... Mavericks doesn't barrel.
It does.
It doesn't. It's a
seen Healy get barreled on the left.
Healy. That guy.
Tell him to hit that gork and flip at Mavericks.
Yeah, I'll be in then. Yeah, no,
that was lame. He should have barrel rolled.
Yeah, I'm a big stand-up barrel, roof dragging barrel on the shooting at a hurricane.
Where does the bullet come down?
That's the point. What if
it gets whipped around in the hurricane?
That's the best part. Is Arabs, anytime there's a good celebration... People pop their guns off in the air. Love it. And somebody inevitably gets hurt. And that's the price of fun, man.
Yeah.
Yes. You don't have fun unless somebody has the possibility of getting hurt.
Okay. Kevin is exiting the room. Thank you. FloridaSurfFilmFestival.com.
Thanks, guys.
Quarterly screenings.
You guys need to go set up? Yes.
All right. We're looking forward to the party. Before we get off the air, though, I'm going to ask Matt Warshaw, and I'm going to film it for Instagram. So prepare for what you don't know you're going to prepare for. I need a 15-second elevator speech for why people should subscribe to the EOS. It's Fund Drive Month, and Encyclopedia of Surfing, EOS.surf, is surfing's greatest historical resource. Why should people subscribe for $3 a month to the EOS?
I'm going to save a bunch of surf history stuff, magazines, film, digitize all that stuff and keep it in our sphere. But subscribe for the Sunday joint. So every Sunday I send out a newsletter and it's worth reading, and it's fun it's got links to the site, and if you don't like it, I will refund every penny.
Is there a joint smoked when either writing or reading the Sunday joint?
No, I drink a Manhattan. Perfect. And I make the Sunday joint. The Sunday joint actually means it comes from it's a big meal that you would have after church on Sunday, and you'd go and you would eat a joint of a boar, a joint of beef or something. So it was sort of joint as it's got three levels of meaning.
Gotcha.
Joint, the beef, and then also a juke joint.
Gotcha. What do you think, Chaz? Should people sign up?
Oh my goodness. If people should sign up purely if you care about surfing at all. I mean, that's the real dang truth is
I love about this era is democratized surf media.
Yep.
And so pick your path, like
love/hate.
All right. Why do you hate it? Give him the mic.
No, not Matt.
Sorry. No, of course, but the democratized surf media, or just get in that chair and get on that mic real quick.
No.
I want to know. And I'll set you up and then you can disagree.
Okay.
When I was growing up, there was three magazines for me to get all my surf content from. And so it was very homogenized. Mm. And those three, wait, don't let that fall off. All right, sorry. You're drunk, dude. I can't trust you.
Listen to these damn shows and hear people way too far away from the mic.
Make another drink for Scott.
Yeah.
And then the issue was, not only is it just trickled down from those three sources, but those three sources are funded by five companies. So like it was all very homogenized, and I enjoyed it when I was growing up, but then I got older and I realized if I just am on Instagram and I can just follow these individual people, and I get a much more diverse, nuanced version of surfing and personality and all, perspective and all of this stuff.
Upside.
All great, right? It. And yeah, then now there's all these individual content producers, and it's almost, the downside is there's a lot of white noise. I don't get to see all these.
You answered everything. Oh, okay.
It's not just
perfect. White noise. Anyways, we're signing off. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
No.
too much surfing.
Okay.
Too much.
But you can also pick your path. So I show up to the beach, and now there's people riding a bunch of different boards. They're not all wearing black wetsuits.
That didn't come from social media and the new democracy.
No?
That predated it. Oh, yeah. People were hip to that way before.
Okay.
The media told them.
If you took the amount of hours that you spent as a kid looking at those magazines that you remember fondly, and if you took the same amount of hours and applied them carefully to the media that is good, it's better now than it's ever been.
Okay.
It's just that there's so much other stuff that it's hard to get through. But I think. Yeah. The writing. If you take the best 10 people working in surf writing, and I include some of that, might even include people who are on comment threads. If you really find the best writing on surf now, it is twice as good as it ever was. People think back, like people talk when I was at Surfer, and you know, and it was Derek Hind and Phil Jarrett and all these other guys, great writers, but you're getting something, you know, once a month. It was good or something, and it's nowhere near how good it is and how much good stuff there is right now. Not even close. And again, going back as far as you want to go, I've read it all. And
just through this conversation, I've had kind of an epiphany of like a new potential business model or business opportunity is curating this stuff. Like even just talking to Kevin going, where are these films available? Oh, well, come to our site, and then you can click over to...
Right.
A bunch of different individual sites.
But that's the problem. I mean, I think Ira Opper at the Surf Network, essentially that's what he is, right? He is curated surf film.
No, he takes whatever.
Takes anything. Yeah. And also he's got...
He doesn't curate, but it's hard to get licenses aggregate. For people to... Like, I mean, that's the dang thing, is a lot of the stuff just lives elsewhere and you can't put it in one spot, right? I mean, that's the real trouble.
Yeah, you're... David is speaking to a good need. Kind of a Utney reader filter for quality content.
Well, but the other model for that is there's certain people who do that for music. So I don't want to spend all the time to listen to all of the music that came out last week. But if somebody else is saying these are the five great songs that...
Right.
And I have a lot of my friends have people that become their music curator.
The beautiful thing, I guess, is that it exists in surfing, though. It's this little place called beachgrid.com.
partially.
No, I mean, Beachgrid is epic, but it's not the long stuff. It's not the movies. It's not all of it.
I see an opportunity.
Right. Yeah.
I do too.
I'm out of time in my day and like my week, but I'm envisioning like 2020, a newsletter.
You know who's sticking right. goes job out is?
Once a week.
Mr. Let's Build Something, Kevin Miller.
Oh, this is so on Kevin.
He needs another job. He totally does.
He has free time. For the amount of surf films that guy watches.
He has free time.
And then he texts me randomly on a Sunday at midnight. Did you watch tonight's episode of Euphoria?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like he's watching a ton of content. He could definitely.
Ken Miller is in charge. Business mind.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. I see a once a week, like your Sunday joint, once a week newsletter that is like, here's the top five pieces of surf writing.
Right.
Most importantly, the best podcasts. And then surf video content.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Cool. Solved it.
Kevin. Well, we better stop this work, podcast buddy. So you can...
All right. EOS.surf, beachgrid.com, thesurfersjournal.com. Also subscribe to the print, floridasurffilmfestival.com, and surfsplendorpodcast.com. Until next time, Chaz.
Get barreled.